Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw, the go-home show to this Saturday's Day 1 pay-per-view at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday, and welcome back to everybody. Before we get started with last night's Monday Night Raw, we've got a lot to unpack here, folks. Let's start with this. COVID has hit the WWE. Seth Rollins was one of the first people to make it public, saying that he had COVID. Tweeting out a happy COVID Christmas to me. This has caused a chain of events, and it's caused a lot of speculation. So let's tell you what we know. We know for sure that Seth Rollins has COVID. We know for sure that Becky Lynch has been sent home off the road. No indication she has COVID. But that what they're doing is they're sending people off the road that they need for the pay-per-view because they don't want them to get a positive COVID diagnosis and then be out of the pay-per-view. So they pulled Roman Reigns off the road. He wasn't at Madison Square Garden for his big six-man tag team match. Bianca Belair was pulled. Becky Lynch was pulled. Bobby Lashley was pulled. Several people were pulled. As precautionary measures, not because they necessarily have COVID, we don't know. This has caused a real furor, and unfortunately, it really did change what we saw last night on Monday Night Raw. There were several things that did not happen that we'll get into. But at the same time, as the WWE had this outbreak of COVID, the WWE has announced a very interesting policy in which they're saying they no longer are going to require their workers to get weekly or twice a week or even weekly COVID tests anymore. This has caused an absolute outrage in the wrestling community. And even what I hear, some of the workers are not happy with this, saying it's now an unsafe work environment. But let's try to be rational, because what has happened here is COVID was so serious for so long that people are scared to death. And we have to take a giant breath and realize this can still be serious, but it's not like it was, folks. Pneumonia can be serious, too. The flu can kill you. And what's ending up happening is it's very contagious, this Omicron, but apparently it's not exactly as crippling. Certainly you saw Seth Rollins cut a promo last night from his house. He didn't look like he was sick. Didn't look like he needed a ventilator. So what's trying to happen here is this. At least here in New York City, and I don't know how it is where you are, it's not that easy to get a COVID test. There are people standing in line for hours. Hours. To get a COVID test. And I think the WWE, before you get all over them, figured we have a vax mandate. The great majority, if not all, I believe it's all of their athletes are vaccinated. And for us to continually test every single person, regardless of whether you have a single symptom or not, twice a week is wasting the tests. Now, never did they say, if you don't feel good, we won't give you a test. Never did they say, we're going to stop taking temps and making sure that your temperatures are fine before we allow you in the ring. They never said any of those things. All they said was, we are not going to administer tests twice a week to people who are perfectly healthy and have no symptoms. Now, I hear the outcry already. You could be asymptomatic, and you can give it to someone else anyway. Correct. But the bottom line is there is a obvious shortage of tests right now. And I think the WWE figured all of our guys are vaccinated and girls are vaccinated. We can still make sure that they pass the temperature test. And if anybody feels even slightly remotely symptomatic, they certainly will get a test. I'm not sure that's cause to call them an uncaring, unsympathetic company who just wants everybody to die. Please name me the WWE wrestler that died of COVID. There's not a WWE wrestler who wrestled through the entire pandemic who died of COVID. Now, several people got it. Keith Lee got it. I know. Some of the announcers got it. I believe some of the wrestlers got it and kind of just kept it hush-hush. Seth Rollins has decided not to keep it hush-hush. The bottom line is, folks, this company's made a decision based upon facts that they know. No one's questioning them. No one's telling them they must. So before we jump all over them, let's think it out. Fully vaccinated workers, did for temps, slightest sign of any kind of symptom, and you will be tested. I don't necessarily think this is the biggest issue in the world. I know a lot of people do. I just don't, Mike. I think, you know, they've conscientiously made a decision that there's no point in testing, you know, wasting 350 tests a week, 400 tests a week, based upon people who are saying, well, I don't feel any different than I ever did.
Right, and it's not just the WWE. It's not just running out of the test for the WWE. How many other businesses in different states are having to test at least once a week? You know, so that's a thing. If you're having every business in a, let's say, New York City has the test once a week, you know, you're going to run out of tests, you know. So obviously, this is a decision not just that they don't want to do it. It's a decision, it's a pragmatic decision, figuring, well, there just aren't enough tests, and we kind of trust our athletes to, you know, we'll give them the old temperature test, and they have a slightly high temperature, we're going to send them home. I mean, look, like you said, Keith Lee had it. So did his girlfriend, Mia Yim. She had it,
right?
You know? So it's like, I get it. I get it. There are so many tests. There are only so many tests nationwide, you know? And you can't just, I know, you know, sweat's flying and all that stuff, you know, you get all worked up during a match or whatever, you know. I know that. I get that, right? But just because of that, you can't be testing them every time they show up at an event multiple times, you know.
Right.
There just aren't that many tests.
And it just gets to the point where it's redundant. I agree. And then never did they say they weren't going to test anybody who asked one or requested one. They never said that. So let's be a little fair to the WWE here. I've heard other programs saying the most uncaring company, unsympathetic, don't care if people die. That's just ludicrous. I mean, that's just being dumb. Stop already. You know, for those people who are constantly on this, I wish wrestling would just shut down. And say, okay, have your way. There is no wrestling. Go do something else with your life. And then you'd hear these same people say, this is ridiculous. Seth Rollins looks perfectly fine. He's got COVID. He's going to get over it. Just like 99.8% of every single American. because that is the actual rate of recovery from COVID. So let's not panic here, folks. Let's not go crazy. Everybody's going to be just fine. The pay-per-view, there could be some questions. Now, the CDC has said, well, if you really don't have any symptoms, you don't have to stay in quarantine for 14 days. Some people are saying as little as 5. So that shrank. So that's good news, right? We always hear bad news. How about some of the good news? If you have no symptoms and you've been exposed, or even, you know, 5 days. So that means people like Becky Lynch, who maybe tested and did not test positive, and other people who were exposed to Seth Rollins, like Kevin Owens is around. He was exposed to Seth Rollins. So obviously, if you have no symptoms after a short period of time now, it's not no longer 2 weeks in isolation, the pay-per-view should be okay. The WWE made the right decisions pulling people off the road and making sure they were okay and keeping them away until. However, last night, because of that, we had a very short card. And let's be kind and say it's not the card the WWE wanted to present. So obviously it's a second-rate card as far as what they had planned, because a lot of stuff didn't happen that they had planned. However, even given that, this was not a great show. This was not a great show. Started out with RK-Bro, and Riddle is taking this thing a little too far, in my opinion. For a while, Riddle was just like that annoying dude who means well and he's kind of harmless and he likes Randy Orton. But now it's getting really, really like you're almost jumping the shark at this point. He's so dumb that no one believes he even could win a wrestling match. He's literally a half step off of being Eugene. Literally a half step off of being Eugene. So we'll see how that plays out. Obviously, the RK-Bro tournament was going to continue. They were in the ring talking about Randy Orton's problems with Otis and that he was going to fight Otis. Out come Alpha Academy, Chad Gable, ran his mouth a little to Matt Riddle, and Riddle decided to challenge him. And this is how we started off Monday Night Raw with Riddle against Gable. Chad Gable is the most underutilized, most fun-to-watch worker in the WWE. No question about it. None. I've not seen a bad Chad Gable match, and that's accounting for the fact that we always know he's going to lose. Usually that takes the element of whatever out of these matches. We know Chad Gable's not beating Riddle. But, man, he is fun to watch. And him and Riddle did put on a decent match. So, Todd, listen, I think they underutilized Chad Gable to a degree. I guess they see him as nothing but an enhancement talent. But, to be honest, he's a lot of fun to watch.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said about Chad Gable. He's one of the best he is one of the greats to watch and to keep an eye on. You know, he's just one of those enhancing talents, like back in the day, as a jobber, and he puts on good matches.
Yeah, it's a shame they don't see that much more in him. He's pretty good on the mic, too. He's not that bad. And, you know, I think they could utilize him. You see, this was the time. With the WWE having a lot of their big guns out, this was the time when you could have really promoted some of the other guys. And they kind of didn't do that, Mike, but at the same token, you know, Chad Gable always does come through with a decent match.
He really does. And think about this. A couple things about Chad Gable. One, he's a guy that you look at him, they list him at 205 or whatever it is, but you look at his body, he could pass for 215, 220. You know, he's one of those guys, right?
Right.
You know, and he's another one of these guys that you look at his body and you look how he keeps himself in shape. you could get, he's probably, what, in his early 30s now, but you could probably get another 15 years out of this guy because he keeps himself in such good shape, and he's much like AJ Styles and Seth Rollins in that respect.
Yeah, and the thing about Chad Gable, because I know people are going to say, well, you said you don't like really small wrestlers, and it's ridiculous to see him in the ring with Drew McIntyre. Yeah, but this guy is an Olympic wrestler. That does make a difference. He has legitimate credibility. He's a guy that you can say, well, yeah, okay, he's somewhat diminutive, but he's legit. Not just some guy who does flippity-floppity moves. And for a guy his size, he's very powerful. Of course, they help and whatever, but still, the transferring of the weight, he does it well. He's a lot stronger than he looks, and he's got legitimate credibility. So I wish they'd use him more, to be honest. Right after that, of course, we go to Randy Orton and Otis because they're out there, right? This is the one thing that bothers me. People have wrote to me and said, it's no big deal. Everybody loses to Randy Orton. Randy Orton's a legend. So Otis lost to Randy Orton. Yeah, but they don't lose when they're in the middle of a push. You see, if Otis had to tour through the entire half of the Federation and then started a long program with Randy Orton in which they had two or three matches where there was no conclusion and then he ends up losing, I got no problem with that. I have no problem with that at all. Randy Orton's the ultimate victor. Fine. That's the program you wanted to work. My problem comes with it stalls his push. It's right in the middle of his push. You're just trying to get him across as a guy who you really can't do much with. Last week, he couldn't RKO him at all. This week, he catches him. And that whole push seems to have been throttled now. Don't like that. I'd have much preferred a double disqualification with both sides jumping in. Keep that heat going. Can Randy Orton really RKO Otis? And get a program going with that if you have to. But don't stall him right in the middle of his push. That's what the difference is, folks. You know, a lot of people, the minute somebody loses, there goes their push. That's not always true. Sometimes the loss is important to the push. But usually that comes after you've established them. Otis is still trying to be established. We have not seen Otis yet as this destructible monster really take a loss. Now we have. And I think you could have built him up a hell of a lot more and used him a lot more and got him into some undercard feuds first before you allowed the RKO to kind of stall that, Mike. So I was a little upset with the ending of this one.
Right, I was kind of upset with it as well, because look, you look at, I mean, I go back to the whole Mandy Rose thing when they were together. You look at these two people that were in that gimmick, and for a long time, well, just recently, you look at Mandy Rose and what are they doing with her? They haven't stifled her push down in NXT, you know? She's the champion along with the two other girls, and they're in a little group, and they're champions. They're keeping her strong. They need, like you said, if they would have had him go be carrying through the competition, right, and then after a long feud, Randy Orton's the ultimate victor after a long feud, fine. I'm fine with that. Even you can throw in where, you know, it takes him a while. Instead of him getting it, getting the RKO on him this soon, have it take him a while to find a way to get him. You know, have reversal. Because Otis is another one of these guys. Yeah, he's a bigger guy, but he's got credibility because he's an amateur. He was an amateur wrestler, right? So. Yeah. So he's got that credibility that if he can get his hands on you being that size and he can wrestle you, he's much like Lesnar. Once he gets his hands on you, you're not going anywhere. you know?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I just wish they'd have kept it going. The match was all about what Randy Orton's present was going to be, which turned out to be a hug. So they had to have him win to get to that hug. The hug was more important than Otis's push. That is not a good thing. It's not good writing. Anyway, we get the 24/7 championship champion Dana Brooke and Reggie against R-Truth and Tamina, and as God is my witness, Corey Graves said the following. He said, well, it would be hard to imagine R-Truth could find a better partner than Tamina. Really? My God. Well, that's some statement, because if you give me a pencil, I'll write you down 14 people who would be better than Tamina based on her booking. So I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Anyway, this was like a short, nothing little match with Dana Brooke and Reggie winning. It's barely worth talking about. We had a weird thing where Kevin Owens came out and cut a promo, and then he came out and cut another promo. They were really stalling for time. They were really stalling for time last night. There's no question about it. The COVID thing definitely hurt them last night. Anyway, we finally do get the Bronament finals done, and this was a very good match. The Street Profits defeating Dominic and Rey Mysterio. Really good, strong match. Probably the best thing on the show, Todd. Start to finish, it was good. Street Profits win, so they'll be taking on RK-Bro. That should be really a good match as well.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, the Mysterios and the Street Profits was a pretty good match last night. And why I noticed last night with Montez Ford sort of acted heelish in the match.
Yeah, I noticed
heelish.
That too. Yeah. I noticed that too. We may have some kind of a turn here at day one, Mike. What do you think?
I think so too. And if they're going to turn him, you know, maybe they'll end up turning his wife, a girlfriend, wife, whatever.
Yeah, it could happen.
You know, it could happen. And frankly, one other thing about I enjoyed about the whole Kevin Owens 2 promo deal, you know, I enjoyed the fact that they continue to tease the getting back together of the Hurt Business.
You know, I like that, but I'm going to tell you something. It's starting to wear thin on me that the only time they use them is when Bobby Lashley's opponent, future opponent, needs to get a win. Because that's all they do. They've done that like 3 or 4 times now. Oh, let's trudge back out the Hurt Business like they never left, and we'll throw them at Bobby Lashley's opponent, and his opponent will crush them. If you're going to get them back together, then they got to be serious and they've got to win. And I have no idea why both of these guys wouldn't just jump Kevin Owens, because that's what the old Hurt Business would have done. So, yeah, I'd like to see them get back together, but at this stage of the game, you have undermined Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin to the point where nobody would take them seriously. Why would a guy like Bobby Lashley, who seldom loses, want to hook himself up with guys who do nothing but lose? Nothing but lose. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that anymore. I do know the promo was stretched out, especially the one with MVP and Kevin Owens, and it seemed a little rambling, and it wasn't their usual good stuff, in my opinion. Anyway, AJ Styles comes out and says he's still sort of acting like a heel. I can't figure out what they're doing. I just wish that they'd figure out what the hell it is they're doing. It's obvious AJ's not the heel. It's obvious he's not, because they had the NXT dude in the audience, got called into the ring. He's obviously a heel. But AJ comes out and cuts sort of a heel promo saying, I carried you and I taught you and this, that, and the other thing. Who wrote that? If you want AJ Styles to be the face, AJ Styles should have come out and said exactly what I said last week. I thought Almost and I were friends. You know, a lot of people said AJ's kind of teaching them, and I was teaching them. I was trying to break him into the business and giving him the benefit of my experience. But in the meantime, we became friends, and that was actually more important to me. And I realize how big he is, and I realize how strong he is, and I realize the potential he has, but I also know this. In professional wrestling, you can be big, and that'll get you so far. But eventually, you're going to have to know how to wrestle. You're going to have to know how to handle yourself in this ring. That's what I was trying to teach him. And I don't know what happened. He grew impatient. He grew upset. I don't know what happened to him. But I didn't just lose a guy who you think was a student of mine or something. I lost a friend. So the best thing I can do is to continue to teach him. You know how I'm going to do that? I'm going to beat him at day one. They're this and they think they're that. I've done this for so many years. He's going to get humbled, and then he'll realize I don't know it all. That would have at least made it look like AJ Styles was a face before he gets interrupted by Apollo Crews and Commander Aziz. And then one of the weirdest things I've ever seen happened. Commander Aziz takes the microphone and says, well, you lost your giant, but Apollo Crews still has his. If you can handle the big men, show me. Fight me one-on-one tonight. And AJ Styles says, okay. All right. We go to commercial break, and when we come back from a commercial break, he's fighting Apollo Crews. And we're told, well, Apollo said he's giving Aziz the night off. What? When did that happen? And why did that happen? Anything. It should have been the reverse, right? It should have been Apollo Crews interfering on behalf of Aziz, not Aziz interfering on behalf of Apollo Crews. And then another really weird thing happened. AJ Styles gets the victory over Apollo Crews. And Aziz jumps in the ring, and he catches a phenomenal forearm. And he sells it for maybe 3 seconds, and then gets up and comes after AJ Styles again. And Styles looked legitimately pissed off. And threw a couple of shots at him, and Aziz falls down again. And I say to myself, I don't know if that was supposed to happen. Styles looked a little bit bewildered of why Aziz kind of half no-sold the phenomenal forearm. And he kind of looked like he threw a couple of punches, could you stay down? I don't know. Maybe it was planned that way. If it was, it looked stupid. I didn't like it. I don't know what they're going to do with the AJ Styles thing. He didn't get the crowd reaction that he normally would get because fans weren't sure. He's coming out and cutting a heel promo before he's interrupted by the NXT dude, whose name I don't remember. And then when fans sort of realize, well, I guess he's a face because this guy's a jackass. And then here comes Aziz and Apollo down. It was too late to really get the cheering started. If you want AJ to be a face, he's got to have the sympathy of the fans. The way you do that is to have AJ admit that Omos was a friend more than someone he was mentoring, and that he feels like he lost a friend. And then you have this loudmouth jump in the ring and yell and scream. And then you have Apollo Crews come down and maybe take on Aziz or something, whatever you're going to do. But this match just looked all kinds of weird, Mike. It just very strange.
It was very strange, and especially the fact that, I mean, there were times during the match when the crowd was cheering for AJ.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was weird, you know, and again, the whole thing with the fabulous, the forearm and stuff like that, the phenomenal forearm, the guy, generally speaking, people, you get hit with that and you're done. I'm sorry, you just are. And I understand this guy's a 7 foot guy, a near 7 foot guy, and probably around 300 pounds or whatever. And you don't expect that type of, you know, AJ's what, 210, 215, whatever. You don't expect a guy like that to sell that forearm, but this is AJ Styles, and this is one of his finishing maneuvers, you know? This is
plus, Mike. I think what they were trying to do, I think they were trying to say, look, he can knock out a guy Aziz's size with it. Maybe he can knock out Almost with it. But they blew it. Aziz blew it. Aziz's part in that match was supposed to be so the announcers could say, AJ Styles hit that phenomenal forearm, and a guy the size of Commander Aziz is down. That could be Almost. Almost has to understand that. That guy's almost his size. And you just saw what AJ Styles did. So don't count AJ out. That's kind of what it was supposed to be. Instead, it was like, yeah, well, that really didn't work so well. Mind-boggling, Todd. I don't know what the hell. I don't even know why he was fighting Apollo Crews. Aziz challenged him.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. The guy who was in the crowd from NXT, his name is Grayson,
yeah, whatever, yeah.
Grace Waller, or something like that.
Yeah, that's him. And look, I don't want to be mean to that guy, but he's good on the mic, and he's a pretty good wrestler, but like everything that he does, I've seen before. He just reminds me of a guy who's trying to be somebody else. I'm not overly impressed with him yet. I know he's, you know, been around a little. He's not super veteran or anything, but we'll see. We'll see what happens in the coming months with him. But right now, I'm not overly impressed. We then get Dolph Ziggler versus Damian Priest. And Damian Priest thing you've blown. You know, Damian Priest was actually growing on me. He was growing on me as this guy who was a very calm guy, but underlyingly you knew he was dangerous. He kind of indicated he was a gangbanger. He kind of indicated he had some troubled youth and things like that. And you kind of knew, like, he's a guy who he's out here doing his best, but if you really want to get into a fight with him, it's not gonna be pretty. But then you took it and jumped the shark, and you tried to make it like, I have a demon inside me named Damian, and if you piss me off, well, who doesn't get pissed off in a wrestling match? The whole concept of a wrestling match is you're going to get pissed off every time, right? So if you piss me off, you're going to see that side of me, and that side of me, unfortunately, usually gets disqualified or counted out or whatever, so that doesn't make you a very good champion. But then to add insult to injury, they have Dolph Ziggler kind of indicating, I want to bring out that side because why? So he can get disqualified and you don't win the belt? So you can get your ass beat and get your hand raised, but you still don't get the belt? That does not make sense. That writing does not make sense. They put on a decent match. And like I said, Damian Priest was growing on me, but this version, Mike, it's so limited that I don't know where you're going to go with it, because eventually he's going to have to lose. And when he loses, the whole, well, I snap and go crazy is over with, and I just think they made a mistake with it.
I think they did, too. And look, this smacks of what WCW was doing with Chris Jericho at way back when, where he'd lose a match and he'd fly off the handle and start beating up on the ring post with a steel chair, you know?
Yep.
This smacks of that, you know, and that's bad. And look, here's the deal, though. Think about this. Damian Priest is not a young guy. He's basically in his late 30s now.
Right.
So you're messing up something with a guy that maybe only has a limited time left in his career.
You know, the thing is, what aggravates me is this. When he first came in, I said, well, you should have made him a darker character. Because called Damian Priest, and you're coming out with all the fire and the darkness and sort of a gothy-looking whatever it is, and then he's just like some gangbanger, you know, some street kid. I'm like, that's not too good. That doesn't work. But it was growing on me because he was doing a good job of being like, look, I've tried to overcome. I've known people like the Damian Priest that they were presenting at first, which is, I went to prison and I did time and I did some bad things and I'm trying to be like real cool. and I'm trying to be more mellow. But you knew those are the type of guys you didn't want to really aggravate a lot, because they've been there, done that, and they'll do it again. And it was starting to grow on me a little bit. And then you had to come out with this nonsense of, well, there's a separate entity inside me named Damian. Since when? He's been in the Federation over a year. I've not heard this. It doesn't work. Stop it already. You're limiting a guy who really should not have those type of limitations, Todd.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with this Damian Priest character, what he's doing now, turning like David Banner's the Incredible Hulk. Somehow, I just don't like it. I still don't like it. I just like the other gimmick better when he had the invisible arrow with the fire and all that other stuff. That I kind of liked.
Could do that. You could say, well, my past wasn't exactly being a street thug. It was being involved in a group of people who were into some weird things or whatever. That's fine. But not this. And then he bugged his eyes out of his head like Ricky Ricardo on I Love Lucy, and I just can't. It's just not working for me at all. It's not working for me at all. And we close the show. The main event of Raw is the Miz and Maurice renewing their wedding vows with Eric Bischoff officiating it. And here's the thing about The Miz. I know there's some people who do not like The Miz. I do. I think he's fantastic. And I'll tell you why I think he's fantastic. Because he's one of these guys that you can hand garbage. He gives it back to you a lot better. This was garbage. This whole thing, the way it's written, the way it was, everything about this is garbage. And The Miz still managed to make it entertaining. First he slipped. That was legitimate. That's pretty funny. But then he sold the slip, which was really good. But again, selling the slip and doing all that kind of stuff, it almost makes him like he's a face. And then here's the thing that I do not get. They get in the ring, and Maurice, who's not that good of an actress, so I think she was legitimately touched by the whole thing, was crying. She's telling him how wonderful a father he is and how she loves him so much and blah, blah, blah. He says, the first time I met you, you couldn't even speak English, so I'm going to try to speak to you in French. He blew it. And she said, you're starting to slide into Spanish. And he's like, okay, let me just say it in English. And he tells her how much he loves her. This is not how you get heat. I don't know how you get heat off this. Two people telling each other they love each other in the middle of a ring, renewing their wedding vows and saying that they love each other and mentioning their children and the happy life they're having together is not heat. And then out comes Edge, like a bad guy. Okay, because I got news. Yes, I know he was jumped. Yes, I know he was tricked. But this was your time for Edge to come out. See, this is what your writers don't understand. This was your time for Edge to come out and say, I had a feeling you knew I'd come out here. And you probably think I'm out here to try to beat your ass or humiliate you. But I'm not. And here's the reason I'm not. Because I have respect for what you just said. And I have respect for your renewing your wedding vows. And I'm out here to congratulate you. But I'm also out here to tell you this. Saturday, you're mine. You'll pay all your dues then. Congratulations to both of you. And that's it. Because then he looks like, okay, well, he's a nice guy. He says, I'm not out here to ruin your wedding. Well, number one, it's not a wedding. This is not a wedding. This is renewing your wedding vows. I don't know who told Edge it was a wedding, but it's not a wedding. Then he says, I'm not out here to ruin it. But quite obviously, he set up the brood bloodbath thing. So he was out there to ruin it. Ay, has this been a bad feud? Only thing that was good about it was Edge tried to save being made to look like a fool last week by saying, I was made to look like a fool last week. I knew you were jumping me, and you still got the jump on me. And I knew it. I saw it coming, and I still didn't see it coming. At least he addressed that. But the rest of this was horrible. It was just horrible. It made Edge look like a petty, Okay, you got jumped by the guy. Okay, you didn't get tricked by his wife because you knew she was lying to you. So she didn't trick you. Why in the world would they have Edge look that petty when all he had to do was take the high road to look like the face? You should have had The Miz come up with some trap. You know, The Miz should have had something. Like, if I was writing it, I would have had The Miz set up that bloodbath. And then think twice about pulling it or whatever. Maybe you got, I don't know, maybe you have like a little chain or a little string or something that The Miz said, oh, I knew he was coming out here. And we got something special for you. No, I'm not coming out here to interrupt. Honestly, I just came out here to say congratulations, and I'll see you on Saturday. But I'm not gonna put this down. I thought this was beautiful. That's wonderful. Good for you. Good for you. Doesn't change what I'm gonna do to you on Saturday. But good for you. And then if Bischoff said, "What is this thing?" or Maurice accidentally pulled it or something and dumped them, you would have said, The Miz had that planned. He was going to dump the blood or the yuck on Edge to humiliate him, and it backfired, and he got it. He's the one who got it, but it was his plan. No, it was Edge's plan. So when Edge came out and said, I'm not out here to ruin your renewal of wedding vows, that is a lie. I don't understand how that's a face, Mike, and I just don't understand the concept.
I don't get it either, and how does that help if one of your ultimate goals is to have a mixed tag team match with Edge and Beth and Miz and Maurice? How's this whole situation gonna make Miz and Maurice the heels? Because obviously you want them as the heels, and how's it gonna go furthering of him being of Edge? And what's her name? And Beth Phoenix being the face, because obviously, up until this point, before she stopped doing commentary, she was a face commentary person, right?
You know, glad you mentioned that, Mike, because that's the first thing that went through my mind. Is I said, how does this help Beth if they're going to do a mixed tag team match? How does this help? Wouldn't it have been better for Edge to come out and say, I'm not going to lie to you, Miz. I started out to this ring to beat your ass and ruin this because of the way you humiliated me for two straight weeks. And I'm pretty sure that that's the only reason you even had this, is to try to lure me out to humiliate me again. But halfway out here, I started thinking about what you two were saying to each other. And I took a look at Maurice and these tears she's crying. And she's not kidding. I saw her when she was kidding last week. She's not kidding this week. So I can't do it. So I want to tell you that on day one, I'm going to beat your ass. Not tonight. Tonight I'm out here to say congratulations to both of you. And I'm going to leave it at that. Then if something bad happened where The Miz had him set up and Eric Bischoff accidentally triggered it saying, well, what was this thing? Didn't you say you wanted me to pull this or something? And boom, they get dumped. That would have been, The Miz set that up. It wasn't clear that the wedding vows weren't being renewed out of really honestly wanting to renew them only to trick Edge again. It wasn't clear. That's what you were going for, that they just planned this to get Edge out there to do something worse to him again. It wasn't clear. And because of that, The Miz and Maurice end up looking like the faces. How does that help Beth Phoenix? It doesn't. The only way this is going to work with Beth Phoenix is if Maurice does something bad to Edge and literally says, you're not going to hit me. I know you. You're not going to lay a finger on me. And then Beth Phoenix comes out and says, but I will. Then you got it. But you don't have it now. And it's not working. I had people say to me, It was a setup. The Miz and Maurice were lying about wanting to renew their wedding vows. It was all a trick to get Edge out so they could do something horrible to him. Well, then it was bad writing because you didn't make that clear, and they didn't have anything set up to do anything horrible to him. That's why I say if they had planted the blood saying, oh, remember he used to like to give people these brood, you know, blood baths, we're going to do it to him. And that backfires and it dumps on them anyway. Then you would have said, oh, I get it. They tried to set him up and it backfired. That's not what we saw. We saw Edge come out saying, I don't want to ruin this, and clearly planned to ruin it. I'm glad you brought that up because I don't think that does one thing to help the Beth Phoenix Edge mixed tag team.
I don't think so either, and that's the thing. And again, this is another example of a misstep. You know, I mean, think about it. How many over the past several years? How many missteps and different? It's not just this. In different things that they've been doing, have they done? I mean, from doing whatever they did with Alexa Bliss and Bray Wyatt to et cetera, missteps all over the place, and it's their own. It's like in tennis, it's the unforced error. You know,
it really feels that way, and they do it constantly. I mean, you're right about that. They do it constantly. And some people are asking, well, what was the matches that were supposed to happen? Well, it was supposed to be Almost versus AJ Styles, and for whatever reason, I was told Almost was in Detroit backstage and was sent home. Now, I don't know whether that was, we don't want to risk anything, but AJ Styles is there. You going to risk it with him? So I don't know why Almost did not fight AJ Styles last night. He was there, and he was sent home. Finn Balor was supposed to be a fighting Austin Theory. Neither one was there. Not sure why. I know Vince McMahon, Michael P.S. Hayes, Bruce Pritchard, quite a few of the producers, they weren't backstage last night. Everybody's a little bit worried, I guess. They don't want this to get too out of control where everybody's sick. Because here's what you got to remember. In the beginning of the show, I said, well, you know, it's a much less serious variant. Nobody's going to die from it. No, they're not going to die from it. But at the same time, you don't want everybody sick where they can't perform. So you have to take some precautions. Anyway, I got one more thing we want to close with before we give our ratings. The WWE has apparently reinstated this. I hated this. They used to do this in 2018 and 19 and earlier probably even. Seat fillers is what it's called, and they use them mostly for pay-per-views and TV tapings sometimes, but mostly pay-per-views. And what it is that you literally hop from seat to seat. You have to have an application. You have to fill an application. You have to be chosen to be a seat filler. And the rules are you can't tell anybody that there's any such thing as a seat filler. So if your husband goes up to go to the bathroom and he's in the front row on the hard camera side, some dude's going to take his seat or some woman's going to take his seat. And they're told to tell the person, I'm not stealing his seat. I just have to sit in it until he gets back so that the camera doesn't see an empty seat. That's exactly what seat fillers do. And then that same seat filler, when the guy gets back from the bathroom, an official will say, okay, go to roast four over here and sit here. Then go to up in the bleacher and sit there. You're hopping seats all night long. That's what you're doing. You're hopping seats all night long. They do that so you don't see empty chairs when the camera's on that side. I don't like the idea. Any idiot knows if there's a couple of blank chairs for a match, somebody probably got up to get popcorn or go to the bathroom. You know, nobody thinks, oh, there's just one chair they didn't sell. I mean, come on. People aren't dumb. They used to do this, like I said, a couple of years ago. And I guess they've reinstated it. And the thing that cracks me up is they say, we don't want anybody to know we're doing it. Well, we all know you're doing it. You can apply online to be a seat hopper for day one. I don't get it. I don't think it's worth it, Todd. It's just kind of dumb. I mean, what's the big deal if a seat's unoccupied for, 15 minutes?
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's so dumb and stupid to have those seat fillers reinstated. And they never had this back way back then, seat fillers.
I got a news flash for you. If I come back from the bathroom and I've taken my girlfriend to a wrestling match and there's a strange dude in my seat, somehow I feel we're both going to get ejected from the building. I don't get this, Mike. I mean, it's so petty. It's so ridiculous.
Right. And think about this. The Oscars used to do that same thing.
Yeah.
You know? And they stopped. And they haven't done it. And this was, I think around a decade ago they used to do this. And they stopped it, and they haven't done it since. That should tell you something.
It's so ludicrous. I could see it if, and by the way, let's not confuse these people. This is not giving away tickets. This is not saying we didn't sell a certain portion of this, and so we're just going to give away tickets to make it look like it's full. That's not what this is. These are people whose job it is to fill your seat in if you got to take a leak and you're on hard camera sign. That's ludicrous. It's just ludicrous. Like, I'm not going to say, oh, well, there's one blank seat there, and, oh, no, okay, the next match the guy's back. He probably went somewhere. Big deal. My God, talk about being anal about, oh, no, nobody would ever leave a seat during a WWE match. That's just dumb. I'm sorry, that's dumb. I read the whole instructions and how to apply, and it was comical. It's actually comical. It's telling you don't drink too much alcohol, or we'll throw you out. Make sure you don't have any problems like knee problems or that you can't walk well because you're going to have to go upstairs and run to this seat and run to that seat. Ugh. Don't tell anybody. Oh, my God. That's really dumb. I'm sorry. That's just as dumb as dumb can be. Anyway, let's get to the ratings. I'm going to have a little sympathy because I understand that with the COVID thing hitting, this was last minute. But it's also the go-home show for day one. And, this was not good. It was not good. The only match that really furthered anything for me was we now know, of course, that the Street Profits are going to take on RK-Bro. Okay, that's going to be a good match. So I guess that match made me want to see that. Didn't know I was going to see it, so I can't say more. But, I guess that whet my appetite for the tag team match. Aside from that, no Bobby Lashley, no Seth Rollins, no Big E. Kevin Owens had to do this on. Yeah, they were on videotape, but not the same. Owens had to try to do it by himself. It didn't work. I tell you, it was rough. It was rough. I'm going to give it a D, and had there been no COVID, it probably would have been better. I understand. But I got to give it a D. It really should be a D-. But because they, on last minute, had to change a lot of things, I'll give it a D. Mike, what's your thought?
I'm going to give it a D+, only because I really do like, I really did like the match with Chad Gable.
Yeah, that's a good match.
He is really, really impressive, and if they handle him right, he could be big. I mean, and I'll say this: you got three guys that are faces right now that you could easily stick in a group, and that's AJ, that's Finn Balor, and that's Nakamura. and you could do a new club, you know, if you wanted to do that. You could easily do that. And one other thing, Marcus, apparently the plan is with Roman Reigns, apparently, and I saw this over the internet, that the plan is to have Triple H be the Bloodline's manager now, apparently.
Ay. Let's hope that's not the case, because that would suck. Only because Triple H's heart problems, he's not going to be able to do anything. He's not going to take no bumps or anything. Here's my hope, is that this is all a setup. My hope is that Paul walks Brock Lesnar down, says, I'm going to teach Roman Reigns a lesson, and then turns on Brock, and Roman and Paul reveal this is all just one big hoax. Brock's an idiot. Paul Heyman can make fun of him and say, you know, the one thing Brock Lesnar can't do is think. That's why he hired me. He's a massive dude, and he's a beast incarnate, all right, and he can wreak destruction. You can have him crazy, and we did it. And then Brock Lesnar disappeared for a while. If he wins the Royal Rumble and goes after Roman Reigns with a vengeance, that could be really cool. Putting Triple H as the Bloodline's manager is not what I would want to see. So I hope that's not the case. Todd, what's your rating?
I gotta go with the same grade with you. A D minus.
If it was very good, unfortunately. We'll see what Saturday brings. So that means we should have a very interesting show on Sunday, because it will be our recap of usually our recaps on a Monday. So that should be very interesting. I really hope that none of these matches are affected. I really hope that. And I hope that everybody who does get COVID, this new variant, you know, seems to be a little more contagious, but also a lot less deadly. So let's hope that, you know, fast recovery, and I don't feel well for a couple of days, but let's hope this is the beginning of the end of COVID. Let me just say this. This is usually how viruses die. They're very, very powerful and potent at the beginning, and then they start to have variants. And the variants start to get weaker, and they start to get weaker, and then pretty soon they become kind of a strain of the flu. This is what happened to SARS. This is what happened to swine flu. Let's hope it happens to COVID, Mike, because, you know, wrestling's having a hard time through this era.
Yeah, it really is. And it does. I mean, look, wrestling was kind of, particularly WWE, was kind of circling the drain anyway before COVID, because of the poor writing and everything else we've talked about on the show almost ad nauseum, and then COVID hits.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, you nailed it. They were circling the drain, all right. And somebody put in an extra flush when COVID came through. So, yeah, let's hope better things ahead, and we will see you on we'll see you on Friday with our picks for day one. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.